Paddy Kenny. Goalkeeper, played for Sheffield United, QPR, Leeds, Bury, Rotherham and several other northern teams. Won the championship at QPR and was named two-time player of the year at Sheffield United. 7 appearances for Ireland, has spent more time with Neil Warnock than any person in human history. And of course, author. But let's see what the book club thought in today's The Football Book Club.
When we lost toss at start game and I run full length at pitch to change ends, I were blowing out my backside. Don't you worry about that.
You said in the book he struggled to concentrate because he talked about porn all the time.
I couldn't believe, why would you buy Leeds United and then penny pinch?
I love how you go from being timid to telling Roy Keane to f*** off.
That's the bit of the book where I really felt like I was in the dressing room with you. And for that, I hate you.
He says, I know what I'm going to get from you on pitch. And obviously off the pitch, I know there could be a car crash coming now and again. But he says, I've got to accept that.
Hello and welcome to the Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read yet another footballer's autobiography. Less Dan Brown, more Michael Brown. I'm James Bug, and over the weeks we've been reading such classics as Jamie Redknapp's On the Ball and Fernando Torres' El Niño, but today we have an extra special episode where we're reading Paddy Kenny's brand new book, The Gloves Are Off, and reading it with me are Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
James Balgin.
Hello.
And Paddy Kenny.
Hello.
Yes, Paddy. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yourselves, you all good?
Very good. Congratulations on the book, Paddy. It's out today, Monday, October the 5th, through Vertical Editions Books. We've read it. We absolutely love it. You excited for people to read it?
Yeah, definitely. I've had plenty of good feedback up to press, so I'm hoping you boys agree with what I've heard. And yeah, I'm excited for it to come out now.
I've seen you've had a lot of really good press about it, which is great. And it's totally warranted. It's a really brilliant book. Is there anyone you don't want to read the book?
No, not really. Just my kids. Yeah, any of them really.
You don't want your kids to read it?
Nah, I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe not. What age are they allowed to read it?
18.
Okay.
Will you give it to them as a present on their 18th birthday?
They've already got it. I've given the younger kids. They're only 7 and 4. I've already given it then. They wanted a copy to see the picture of themselves and the name in it. So
I'm hoping. Do you worry you're going to walk in on them reading it one time and they'll be like, Daddy, what?
No, because I've said keep it your mother's.
Oh, fair. Okay.
She can deal with that.
Very smart. Now, normally, Paddy, at this point, with a lot of the books, we have a look to see what the reviews are saying on Amazon. But the book's not out, obviously, so it's impossible. So if you're okay, I'm just going to read a quick blurb of the book, just so people know what it is. Paddy Kenny is the larger-than-life figure who bounced back from rejection at 16 and graduated from park pitches to become a Premier League goalkeeper and later represented his country. Paddy Kenny's career was certainly not straightforward, just like his life. In his autobiography, Kenny lifts the lid on his time on and off the football field, including dressing room rucks, being beaten for the Premier League's most famous goal, and having his eyebrow bitten off in a curry house, just days before he faced Cristiano Ronaldo at Manchester United. This is Kenny's story, and the gloves are well and truly off. Sounds good, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You like it.
But it really sets it up, I'll be honest. You sort of read that blurb and you're like, yep, okay.
What a crazy kid.
An eyebrow is going to be bitten off in a curry house.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't had that in a book yet. We read Louis Saha's book does not have someone's eyebrow being bitten off.
So that's a first then, is it? Yeah.
Definitely a first.
Definitely a first, yeah.
Okay, over the show, we'll be asking Paddy some questions about the book, about his career, and we'll be playing a game with him. But first, Paddy, why now? What made you want to write this book?
I don't know. Obviously, I got asked a couple of years ago to do it, and I wasn't really interested. And then, and then about a year ago now, an old agent of mine called Lee Payne, he rung me up and said, I think it's something you should look to do. There's obviously a lot of things you need to clear up and stuff in your personal life, and all, football matters as well. He said, and I've got someone who's willing to do it for you. He's a Sheffield United fan. I think it'd be perfect. And obviously it was Danny Hall. Mm-hmm. I had a meeting with him and basically went from there. I sat down with him. We had a 4-hour meeting in Costa Coffee. I were wired after I'd had that much coffee.
Yeah, <I'm sure. laughs>
I bet I didn't shut up, I don't think, for 4 hours.
Did he write the book there and then?
Yeah, then it was all just in that part.
Okay, we're starting Bury. Yeah. Here we go. Let's go.
We sat there and he just turned around to me and said, 100% want to do this as long as you do. So that's how it come about, really.
I'm glad he did, because you do have a lot of stories to tell. Like some of the books we've read, Not naming names. Some of them, yeah, you know, they have a few stories and then, yeah, not much else happens. They pad it out. Whereas, yeah. Paddy, your book, every page there's a story. And even, like, you know, on the rare occasions there isn't, it's just, it gets carried through by, like, your language in it and the way, and not just the bad language, I mean, also the way your personality really comes across in it really, really brilliantly.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And I think it's all about the honesty, isn't it? Because obviously there's so many things gone off. It's some of the stuff you might watch and not talk about, but if I were doing it, I wanted to do it right. And I know it brought up some good memories, a lot of good memories. It brought up some bad memories, but it was something that had to be done. And if I were going to do a good book, it had to be totally honest and put it all out there, really.
Did you get any of your teammates to read over it before?
No, none of them. So I hope we don't go too badly.
Yeah, is there anything you think you might have betrayed their confidence or anything in there? Yeah.
Nah, they'll be fine. They know what I'm like. They know I'm a fiery head case. So.
Sure. And have you read any of your teammates' books?
No, I've never read them. I'm not a reader either, even though I've got them done it. But, I've had to read through this, and I swear to God, it's took me forever.
Wow, you've written more books than you've read.
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah.
Nice. Well, what I love about it, as I've mentioned, is it's what I'd call a proper footballer's autobiography. It's gritty, it's very sweary. It's what I imagine being in a changing room with Paddy Kenny is like, without having to see a naked Neil Warnock, which we'll come to later. But, you know, it's F this, knobhead that, all the way through. It's real, it feels. And, you know, there's some lines which are very real. I mean, if you don't mind me quoting one or two lines at you.
Aye.
They numbed the end of my cock and shoved a camera up it.
Although I weren't laughing at the time, I'm laughing now. But
I'm sure. Now. Is like some players decide to tone down their books. Did Danny or the publishers ever try and get you to tone it down at all?
I actually remember reading through that bit and I wrote it down because when I was going through the chapters as they were sending them there, I remember reading that bit and I actually questioned whether to put that in. And then I just thought, no, say it how I'd say it. It's got to go in there how I'd say it. Yeah. If I were telling lads, that's how I'd tell the story.
Yeah, you wouldn't use like medical terminology.
Oh, no. Like,
no.
Oh, the end of my penis.
Yeah. That's how I would say it.
I would. Okay. Halifax, don't forget.
But thinking about it, I probably just wouldn't tell people that they put a camera at my penis.
But I was honesty, didn't I?
It's that
story that built into that, which were actually quite a scary part of my life, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's true.
I make it a bit more light-hearted towards the end because I've actually come out of it on the good side. Technically, makes it a bit laughable.
That's like a thing that comes throughout the book. Like even at the most dramatic moments or the most like awful moments that happen to you throughout this book, there's so many funny, you just have such a great way of talking about them and such I think that honesty really comes through. Like, you know, even the Curry House story and the eyebrow being bitten, your description of it is actually, because it is, as terrible as it is, it's also a very funny thing to happen in an odd way.
Yeah.
So it's sort of this weird thing where you're like, this is awful but funny and I'm laughing and I'm not sure if I should be, but it's great. It really, I think it makes it more real.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure, Paddy, if you read about someone else having their eyebrow bitten off over a curry, you'd probably laugh. But oh, if it happened to you, it's probably, yeah.
Might say it's laughable right now, but at the time it weren't very laughable.
No, I'm totally sure it wasn't. But Jack's right. You kind of get straight into the book. Jack messaged me when we were reading it. And he was like, "What an intro!" Because we throw straight in when you're talking about your ban from the game for 9 months, wasn't it?
You were, yeah, 9 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, some footballers might start straight away like, "Oh, here I was as a young kid and that." But you really throw them straight in there. And Jack, you loved it, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like most books will start with the best moment of, like, the players will say, like, the best moment of my career, or, like, this is the pinnacle. Like, we read Jerzy Dudek's book, and he talks about, like, the save in Istanbul. Yeah. And this felt a real, like, this sort of set the tone in a really nice way to be like, no, this is the worst moment of your career when you thought everything was over. It's just such a compelling way to start.
I think that was down to Danny, really, because when we spoke about it, he says, I want to get people gripped straight away. And I think that would get football fans gripped because they'd be like, oh my God, what's gone off?
He's absolutely right. It really did. And then you do afterwards go, you know, back through your childhood growing up. Here's something interesting. You are the first footballer to have their eyebrow bitten off, but you're not the first footballer book we've read who stole golf balls when they were kids.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, can you remember who it was then?
Danny Higginbottom.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Did you do it with Danny Higginbottom?
Not that I recall, but...
Okay.
Must get as child as each other then.
I used to do that when I was a kid.
Did you?
It was just that little buzz of getting it and running off and not getting caught. They didn't get much out of it. There's not much value to a golf ball, is there?
No.
It's not like robbing a post office or at least here. I'm robbing a golf ball but get that buzz still out of it.
Yeah. Was that the next step, do you think, after the golf balls would have been the post office?
Well, at the current where things are now, when I had my baseball cap, when I went into post office the other day and I had my mask on, black hoodie, my baseball cap, like, whoa, here we go.
It's taken, 30 years to go from golf balls to, robbing the Royal Mail. Did you say you used to do that as well, James?
It's an odd thing to do, but when I was a kid, me and my friend used to do it. We used to wait at the bottom and watch them tee off, and we'd run on, grab it, and like you say in the book, by the time they run down, there's no chance of catching you. Yeah. But for no real gain. We just had bags of golf balls with no... It was just ridiculous. And now, I'm older, I could see how... Annoying, that would be.
If I were playing golf and I seen some little lad running on, I would be chasing after him.
Yeah, well, sure.
I used to work in a pitch and putt, and I would have been fuming if any of you turned up. I knew it'd be me who'd be blamed for not having the golf balls at the end. Yeah. So yeah, you're in my bad books for that. But there's some great stories about your dad really early on. He seems like a real character. There's a bit right at the beginning. Where I think it's when you're not offered a youth contract really early on in the book. And your dad stood up, booted a chair over, leaned over George's desk, pointing in his face and said, "I'll prove you wrong, you Scotch cunt."
It was his exact words.
Exact words.
Yeah, I was like that. Oh, my God.
I love the way he says, I'll prove you wrong, though. It's like, it's not him who wasn't being offered the contract. It's you.
Like, how are you going to prove him wrong? I mean... And also, again, that's another really good bit where it's like a tragic moment in your career where you are turned down for a, you know, for this, and you sort of think that your career's over because you've not got into the team, and then immediately undercuts with this hilarious moment with your dad. And then the idea of that he was like, as soon as that was over, he was like, right, we're going to the park. Get the dog, we're going to the park.
Forced me as well.
Yeah.
Did that really help you having a dad who pushed you?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we literally that day went down the park and he was used to wear his steel toe caps and he just toe poke it. We had one ball, no net, and if it went past me and it net, it'd go about 30 yards downhill and actually run after it, run back.
He wouldn't get it.
No dick. He just stood there and toe poked it.
Are you the same with your son now, Paddy, with John Joe? You mentioned John Joe. You mentioned he's a goalkeeper and the fatherly tough love carries on in your book. In the sentence you wrote, "John Joe, he's a goalkeeper and he reminds me of me at his age. Technically, he's wank. I'm completely honest with him about that." Which I loved. I loved the fact that you called your son. Another reason why maybe he shouldn't read it quite yet. Another person you meet on early on in the book, who's very important in your progression as a goalkeeper, is Mr. Neil Warnock.
Who?
And... no questions about Neil Warnock.
Yeah. Oh boy, okay. Yeah. It's going to be a short podcast.
Can you imagine how your career would have turned out without him?
I might not have had one.
Do you really think that would have been the case?
Yeah, possibly, because obviously, like I said, he was at a game when I played well and took me on trial for Bury, so who knows, I might not have had a career at all if it weren't for him being there at the right time.
Yeah, well, that's crazy. To think about, but he sends you out to Whitby, doesn't he?
Yeah.
When you're young, going out, and you say how cold it is, and Whitby is cold. I've been to Whitby.
It's cold in summer.
Yeah, that's true. Good fish and chips, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you go to
good thing that come out of it?
Yeah. Did you ever go to Dracula's house? No, in Whitby. You missed out.
I was scared of crosses. They call me Dracula.
Okay. Very good. That's too good a joke. We're meant to try and do the joke.
That is a properly good joke.
Yeah, I'm fuming.
Yeah, I've been there before.
But Warnock comes across great in this book. You know, he's always yelling at you, then he's your best mate the next second. He lets you do your QPR medical early so you're not hungover after a stag do. It's all that. Yeah. He defends you to the death all the way through. He's great. And is he someone that you, not just in the changing room, but outside the changing room, do you bond with him? Is he a mate of yours, would you say?
Well, we see him and still speak now. We don't speak as much as we used to. Obviously, he's busy with Middlesbrough. But I still do speak to him. And like I said, we had a very close relationship through all my career. Even when I were at different clubs to him, we still spoke. I still called him Gaffer. So, yeah, nice. We've always been like that.
Have you ever considered going to join him at Middlesbrough?
No. Them days are well gone now.
They're over now. Okay, shame. Also, Kevin Blackwell's there. So
maybe. Once he's read this. Last time I spoke to Neil, the gaffer, he said to me, he said, when all this is over, come up to Middlesbrough and come and watch a game. Bring your missus, have a meal and stay over and all that lot.
Oh,
but now book's out, and once Blackie reads it, I know, I think that'll be crossed right off the list.
So have Neil Warnock and Kevin Blackwell, because in the book, you know, there's a little bit of drama between them. You mentioned have they made up now?
Yeah, obviously took him to Cardiff and Middlesbrough. So I'm Rotherham, so he took him to Rotherham, Cardiff.
Yes,
and
true.
So obviously they've made up, but there was a certain part where a point in through the when we were at QPR and he were at Sheffield United and got the sack. We beat him 3-0 at Bramall Lane. The second game of the season, he got sacked and he were over the moon. He were over the moon that he got the sack. We were all like, was he? So at that point, they weren't very close. They obviously must have lost the friendship, but obviously they've got it back together now.
Yeah.
They've been friends for a long time. Obviously, Black used to play in goal for him originally. Mm. So.
Were you ever worried Phil Jagielka might steal your place at Sheffield United?
I walked after a Millwall game when I don't know, you obviously must have seen the video, and then I'm in the changing room, and we've come from 1-0 down after I got sent off at half-time for fighting in tunnel, and we stood there, and he's turned around, and he went, we don't need you no more, Paddy, we've got Jack now.
But to give it a bit of context, Neil Warnock doesn't like having goalkeepers on the bench. A lot of football fans will probably remember that.
Only when it were like five subs. He'd rather have five strikers on than us.
Yeah.
But once he went to seven, I think he thought, I'm going to have a keeper on now.
Yeah, he's got to, yeah.
It must have been stressful being a second goalkeeper in a Warnock squad. If you're the first keeper, it's fine. But if you're a second goalkeeper and you're knowing that a centre-back is above you in the pecking order and you're not even in the squad, it must be so stressful.
Well, that's what I mean. You had to travel. They were still travelling and they were on the bench.
Terrible.
Because what if I got injured or in warm-up or come ill overnight? So, you were like...
You're not putting Phil in.
Yeah.
Was Phil Jagielka genuinely a very good goalkeeper? Could he have been a keeper, do you think?
I think every position, wasn't he? When I played him, he played in goal, centre-half, right-back, centre-mid.
Could you have played centre-back if he got injured? could you have done the same thing
When we lost toss at start game and I run full length at pitch to change ends, I were blowing out my backside. Don't you worry about that. So imagine someone turning me and I've got a quick striker having to run after him. Nah. Can't see that at me.
No.
I don't mean like beep, beep, beep.
Fair enough. Last thing on Neil Warnock. Do you mind if I read? It's one of my favourite parts of any of the books I've read, but also possibly the only time my stomach has totally turned reading any footballer's autobiography. Do you mind? Do you mind if I read it?
You can read whatever you want. It's in there.
Okay. This is in the changing room. That's United.
Enough. There you go. Okay. That'll do. Yeah, I get the gist.
I think you might know the bit I'm going for. Warnock was a lot calmer later in his career when he worked at QPR and Rotherham, but at Bury and United, I saw him lose it completely. At United, he developed this unnerving habit of getting undressed while he was shouting at us. He would be standing there, naked, still going, and then he would get a towel and fuck off into the shower. We could hear him shouting at us from the shower, and then he'd come out and dry himself down. He'd reach into his bag and pull out some pile cream before cocking his leg up on the bench and wiping the cream on his ass. Throughout all this, he was still grilling at us for whatever we'd done wrong in the game. Sometimes it went on for half an hour after the game. We'd be sat there looking anywhere other than him wiping cream onto his ass, sat in our full kit until he told us to fuck off and get out of his sight. How many times did you see him do that?
I couldn't count. I couldn't remember. It was just like a thing that I ended up falling asleep looking at. Oh no.
That's something that haunts your dreams to this day.
It is.
I think that's the bit of the book where I really felt like I was in the dressing room with you.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like it was a 3D full experience. I could definitely visualize it. And for that, I hate you.
Do managers often get undressed with the players as well? Because there's a story we read about. No, they don't. Just
not that I know of. Okay, fair enough. I'm not. Obviously, you heard a different story. You're going to say.
Well, there's a story with Tony Pulis, where he famously naked headbutt James Beattie.
Yeah.
Obviously, you play with Beattie at Sheffield United, so I think that is true. That story. But...
I don't know how true it is, but obviously, I've heard the story.
Yeah. So just Tony Pulis and Neil Warnock do
that. Looks like it. Yeah. It's a good job, isn't it? We don't want them all doing it, do we?
No, that's very true. I think if you asked me what two managers do that, they would be the two people I would guess anyway. But of course, you're at Sheffield United. That's where you got your big break. People thought you were called Kenny Paddy as well.
Yeah, that were the captain. At the end of the season, when I got the player of the year, Robert Page, who I'm really good friends with, who took me to Northampton as goalkeeping coach. Mm-hmm. He got up on stage and he went, he said he did this speech and he just says, Paddy's deserved this. But to be fair, when we first signed him, we all thought his name was Kenny Paddy. Oh, thanks for that. I never spoke to anyone for the first season, so probably could have fought it with that.
There's actually an interesting thing about that. Like, because you're sort of a very, you know, in the rest of the book, you're very vocal and very, like, outspoken. What was the moment that sort of changed for you? Like, where you sort of went from being, like, quite a shy and reserved guy. Was there a sort of moment that made you, like, more outspoken?
No, I wouldn't say there were a moment. I just think it came with experience.
Okay, sure.
Obviously, being comfortable where I were and my surroundings, and all of a sudden just becoming one of the main lads in the dressing room all of a sudden. And the experience comes and confidence comes, and I was settled at a club that I loved and were loved by everyone there as well. So so I probably, there were a significant point when I thought, oh, that's when I changed. It was just in general.
Was it a hard club to kind of grow a lot of confidence in the dressing room? Because it seems like there's a lot of big characters. You mentioned in the book, like Michael Brown and Rob Kozluk.
Yeah, there was. Obviously, like I said, my first year or so, I was quiet as a mouse. We had Robert Page, there were loads of others, do you know what I mean?
That
were
Chris Morgan.
Morse come second year, my second season, sorry. So there were big characters, and obviously I turned into one of them. Obviously, I got older and more experienced.
I love how you go from being timid and quiet to telling Roy Keane to fuck off. it's quite a turnaround.
Yeah, it was massively, especially when you give me that dip. Yeah,
you shouted at him on the pitch on a training match, and he said, and I quote, "Your fucking keeper," Keane began. "I fucking love him. He did a right go at me today. I love all that shit." And he walked off laughing while Alan Quinn breathed a sigh of relief. Do you think that's the best way to go with Roy Keane?
Well, it worked that day for me, didn't it? So lucky enough, obviously, he must have been in a good mood that day.
Yeah.
You see what he's like on telly nowadays. But,
we saw Jurgen Klopp do it the other day. He kind of stood up to Roy Keane a bit. I'm not sure if you saw it on Monday Night Football.
No, I've heard him about it, but I've not seen it.
Yeah.
Did you give him advice?
Yeah, do it over Mike. Recorded, isn't it? It's recorded, not face to face.
Is he as scary as everyone says he is, Roy Keane?
No, he seemed all right. To be fair, when I were with him in Ireland, he obviously come back after everything that had gone off with the World Cup with Mick McCarthy
in 2002.
And it were brilliant for everyone to have him around. Do you know what I mean? Because he was an unbelievable player. And
oh, of course.
And he loved it. He was fiery as hell, which you expect. But like I said, I had that go at him that day, and he. Luckily enough, he accepted it and we're buzzing off it. So it was a sigh of relief afterwards. And Quinny told me, I was like, woo.
He's probably still fuming to this day about that, Paddy.
Yeah.
It's very stocked away somewhere in the back of his mind. But another person who always mentions, who often pops up in books that we've read, is Addy Akinbaye. He seems to pop up in everyone's book for some reason. Are you mates with Addy?
No, I was when he was there. I got on really well with him. He was a nice bloke. We had the same sort of physique, do you know what I mean? So
sure. If you get a chance, can you tell him to write a book? Because he's in everyone else's.
Yeah. So we used to pose together in front of a mirror at gym and things like that. He was the muscly one, I was the cuddly one.
Yeah.
Okay, nice, yeah.
But he was a nice bloke, that's the thing. He was a really nice bloke, Addy was.
Yeah, people have had some stories and some other ones. But,
well, but you wouldn't want an Edel off him, I know that.
No, I please don't ask him to do that to us. I won't say anything more bad.
Yeah, right, listen.
There is my favourite character at Sheffield United. I say character as though they are like... I mean, it's weird thinking about a book and as this, but there's a guy at Sheffield United called Wilco de Vogt that you mentioned.
Goalkeeper.
A Dutch goalkeeper beneath Phil Jagielka in the pecking order. and he... you said in the book, he struggled to concentrate because he talked about porn all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Please tell us more.
Obviously, back in them days, it were all on videos, or you couldn't just access online and get stuff like that. And he'd come in training, we're trying to do like a volley, and he'd be going, "Oh, watch this really good one last night called Jolly Hockey Sticks." Like Jolly Hockey Sticks.
What, so did he like? Was he like asking for recommendations?
I'd be
and
like,
stuff?
Like trying to catch these balls. Big game on Saturday, you know, all I can picture is what's happening in Jolly Hockey.
So he just, there was nothing else. He just would just bring it up unprompted.
Loved it.
That's so weird. Has he been like, I suppose he's been replaced by, you know, Google now in terms of.
His life must be amazing these days.
Yeah. And also now I'm imagining like if you merge Jolly Hockey Sticks with the Warnock cream video.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry everyone. Don't know why I said that.
That's a search no one's doing on Pornhub.
My signal's going.
But at Sheffield United, obviously, you had some of the best years of your career. And, I mean, the season when Sheffield United were fighting on three fronts, long run in the FA Cup, the League Cup, got to the playoff final, obviously, sadly, didn't win. I mean, how was that? How was it being part of that season?
It was crazy. Obviously, I'd do my first season there. I'd gone there, not even knowing if I were going to play. I knew I had a chance of starting because Simon Tracy was coming back from injury, which he never managed to, unfortunately, never come back.
Sure.
So I ended up playing all season. And to go there, and my first home game, there were like 13,000 there. And within a couple of months, we're playing in front of 28,000 because we were doing
that
well, and it were mental. And it was just, it was the craziest. It were an amazing season without achieving out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
just sounds stupid, but Sheffield United had struggled, and Neil had been trying to keep him up for a few seasons when he got there, and then all of a sudden to get to a playoff final and league and FA Cup semi-finals and beat a lot of Premier League teams along the way were absolute. It was like a dream. It were ridiculous what we're going through.
Was there any memory that really sticks out as a really fond memory?
I remember the Leeds match, we were 1-0 down, I think it was the League Cup one, the first one, we were 1-0 down and we scored two in injury time. Jag scored from about 100 yards, it was in goal actually, he shot from
the goal.
Yeah. Yeah, he the goal, he shot from about 40 yards, and 45 yards, and it was a great strike, and then we managed to nick it. I think Peter Rundlove scored last kick at game, and obviously my first Yorkshire derby, and I didn't realise how much of a big clash that was for Sheffield United and Leeds. And come out of that, and they were Premier League at the time as well, and to come out 2-1 win, that was like a massive one, that.
Well, that was when Leeds United were around the Champions League, probably around that time.
Yeah,
which is...
Good. That's ridiculous players, that's what I mean, to beat them. And then we beat them as well in the FA Cup as well, 1-0.
Wow.
So to beat them twice in both Cups were crazy. It took its toll on us, because we were literally playing twice a week all season, you know, because of the Cup run. I remember playing Arsenal in the FA Cup in the Old Trafford and losing 1-0, and obviously Seaman when he made that ridiculous save. And and we were playing on the Tuesday, and that were on the Sunday. And we didn't even train on the Monday. Warnock just said, "Turn up, I'll see you at the game on Tuesday." Because the lads were just on the feet.
Yeah.
And we turned up and beat Forest 1-0. That's how crazy it was.
Yeah. I mean, with obviously the schedule now very tight because of coronavirus, like, I mean, a lot of teams are going to have to do that now. Do you have any advice for any players about how to deal with that kind of fixture, like overload? Or
I think it depends what level, doesn't it? Because obviously Premier League, they've got bigger squads, haven't they? And it's got, for the teams like lower down the pyramid, it's going to be harder for them because they haven't got the size of the squads that the Premier League have got. So it's going to be really difficult for them.
Yeah. You mentioned there was a bit of a knock-on effect from having such a good season. Do you think there's a slight chance the Sheffield United could have the same thing this year? Because obviously they were amazing last season in the Premier League. You know, they were fifth for a long point in the season. And obviously they've had a bit of a tricky start to the season this year. Do you think maybe the same thing could be happening?
Yeah, possibly. I just think they were on such a good run before all this coronavirus kicked in. Mm-hmm. And then it took its toll. I think they didn't win for 4 or 5 games straight after it. And then obviously they picked up a little bit and they dropped off again.
Yeah, then they beat Tottenham.
But then obviously Bramall Lane's a fortress and if you've got 30,000 there, it's massive for them. And all of a sudden now you're playing that league. They had Leeds last week and behind closed doors. It's just not got the same effect for me. And it must be so difficult for players to try and perform out there at the level they normally would do.
Yes. I think you're actually, would you have struggled to play with no crowd there?
It would be probably the first game I wouldn't have been called a fat bastard.
It'd have been better.
Kenny would have shagged your wife or you're a drug head. Fucking hell, I'd have been loving it now. There'd be no one.
but that spurred you on, right, didn't it?
No, that's what I'm saying. I loved all that. So, yeah, I used to get the buzz before a game when I could hear the crowd and the tunnel. And obviously that's not there now and it must be difficult. And like I said, I used to get the grief and I used to bounce off that grief. And
we
want to perform better and prove people wrong. And obviously that won't be happening now, so it'd be probably difficult for me right now. Or one other thing as well.
Of course.
Goalkeepers play out from the back a lot now. I couldn't do that.
Okay.
Warnock, get it forward. Get it forward.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think Guardiola would you be the first on his shopping list?
No, I'd have been like Joe Hart out on the backside.
And gone to Spurs.
Paddy, you mentioned the chance there that you used to thrive off it a bit. Did you ever consider calling the book You Fat Bastard? It's quite a good title.
Do you know what? It was the first thing we thought of.
Really?
But then when we sat down and spoke about it, Danny says, would shops want to sell it without putting the shop with that? Do you know what I mean?
That was by your fifth cappuccino. You were like, But it is great. It's great that you kind of responded to that because just for full disclosure to the podcast, we spent the 10 minutes before this recording calling Paddy a fat bastard so we could try and just to get him G'd up for this recording.
It's really worked, I've got to say. Yeah. We might do it for all of our recordings now.
Yeah. One question I have from the book. You mentioned Dean Windass wiping his ass next to the tea at the Belfry in the book. Is that pretty much... the entirety of the story? Is there any reason why he was doing that?
Before that playoff final, obviously, you know, like you have 2 weeks when you win in the semi-final, you have like nearly 2 weeks before you have a game. So normally the club take you away or do whatever and try pass a bit of time on, because just to train for 2 weeks at the end of a long season is so difficult to keep going when there's no gamer out. So you normally try to get away, and they took us to Belfry for a few days, and I think we'd had a training session, and then he let us have a day where that night when we could get drunk, and we ended up in Bel Air, which is a nightclub at the Belfry, and we were all a bit worse for wear anyway. And then on that golf game, we all had beers and imp buggies going round, and everyone had to neck a shot on every par three. So obviously, by the time he got to 10th, or I think it's famous 10th at Belfry, Dino got there, I think he'd have been wasted again because he was just topping up from the night before anyway. He probably might not remember it.
Is it just wiping his ass? Did he go to the toilet there? Or what?
Yeah. He had a shit on tonight, didn't he? So. Just got his ball, he landed it.
I wish I hadn't asked that question.
James, you wanted to know, and you got the answer. You can't be upset.
I got everything I wanted from this. Did you nick any golf balls that trip, Paddy?
No, but if anyone had nicked mine, a lot would have gone off.
I really like your golf stories, because you talk about when you first went to Sheffield United, you nearly ran Michael Brown over with a golf cart as well.
Oh, yeah. I don't think Warner could have thought it was amazing, would it?
It's just such a great way to introduce yourself.
20-odd goals at season gone missing.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Kenny, you're playing up front. Come on.
Jags play up front.
another of your former clubs... Leeds obviously played Sheffield United last weekend, as you mentioned. Are you surprised Leeds turned things around? Because in the book, you write about them, you know, things sound like a total mess when you were there. And that wasn't that long ago. It was, what, 5, 7, 8 years ago?
Yeah, obviously when I were there, I think there were 3 lots of owners, and none of them were ever right for the club. It was a difficult time. Obviously, they've changed things around now. They've got good owners, good manager. Mm. Obviously, got a good team and good squad now. So it just shows that if you get the right people in charge and the clubs run right, obviously, Leeds is a massive club, isn't it? They're all, they are a Premier League club. And I know they say it, and no one's got a divine right to be in the Premier League. But I think to have them back there is massive. And it just from the club being run right for the last couple of years, has made a massive difference.
But that didn't seem like something that was on the table at all when you were there. It felt like a while off.
Did it sound like it, buying your own trainers? Bringing your own dinner in?
I couldn't believe that, bringing your own dinner in. That was crazy. Yeah, so it was Cellino, wasn't it?
Petty, everything they were doing. Penny pinching. I did an interview the other day, yesterday or the day before, and I just said, I couldn't believe, why would you buy Leeds United and then penny pinch? Why would you even do it? I don't get it.
No.
Buying a football team isn't going to be the way that you're going to make your money.
What, by not buying trainer socks? I'll put
I'll make a fortune.
Yeah. Is that what you do with your business at the moment, Paddy? You say, no socks. No one's having any socks.
Yeah. I don't bring myself no dinner.
Okay. But you, as a kid, if you'd been told that you were going to go to Leeds United, that would have been huge. You must have thought. So in a way, was it a bit disappointing, really?
Obviously, I'm an Halifax boy and everyone I know, my son's a Leeds fan and everyone I know in Halifax are Leeds fans. And obviously, when Neil took over and the opportunity come, QPR more or less did tell me I could leave. When the opportunity come to go to Leeds, I was like buzzing, absolute, couldn't believe it.
Of course,
if Warnock can get going what he got going at QPR and my first year at Sheffield United, then anything could happen because it's a massive club. But unfortunately, the way it were run, it just weren't run right.
A huge shame with that. But, you know, there was plenty of other clubs where you had, incredible moments at QPR. Going through the book, there are some truly amazing incidents that you're privy to all the way through. So, of course, you've got the drug ban, of course, which you mentioned. But also, Sheffield United were obviously massively involved with the Carlos Tevez incident, which was, must have been a nightmare playing around that. The Anton Ferdinand, John Terry incident happened during a QPR match, and the Aguero goal, as you call it, the most famous game in Premier League history. Well, one of the many. We interviewed Perry Groves, and he said, obviously, Perry was on the pitch when Arsenal beat Liverpool in the famous Michael Thomas match when he scored in the last minute. And he was, because I said to him, he said that was the most famous moment in English top flight history. And I said, oh, what about Aguero? And he went, no, it's not the same.
The difference as with me is it was the two Manchester clubs. It was the derby. It wasn't like Liverpool Arsenal's, obviously, London club and a North club. But whereas it were the two Manchester clubs that were fighting it. I mean, that's the difference for me, if you ask me why that's so important.
We're trying to start a beef with Perry Groves between you and Perry Groves. So.
So that's the difference I have between a few options. That was definitely just because it were the two Manchester clubs.
And because also it went well for both the clubs on the pitch. And so obviously QPR were delighted because you stayed up.
Stayed up. And I think that gets taken away a lot from the fact that Man City won the league. We won our last five home games of the season. People forget about that. And we beat Liverpool 3-2, having been 2-0 down, scored three in the last 10 minutes. Then we beat Tottenham 2-1. Then we beat Arsenal 1-0, and it was like there were three out of the five home games that we won, the last five, and it was ridiculous what we achieved in the last few games.
I think I'm the only human being in the world who didn't watch either of those Manchester matches that game. I got Spurs versus West Brom or something up on a dodgy stream.
That mid-table clash.
Yeah.
Hey, we were fighting for fourth or fifth that year, I think. So.
Was that QPR Liverpool game the one when Sebastian Coates scored that?
Was over that, you, was like that, an that game?
I think yeah, that was a 3-2 game.
Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah,
was it?
That was to make it 2-0, I think.
Yeah,
it was a
he scored
great
his crazy overhead kick. Yeah,
yeah.
So, was that you? Was it?
Yeah.
Sorry,
can you remember it? Can you remember?
Yeah, I do remember it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's mad. He was rubbish. He did
Drop it, James.
He was terrible, but that was a brilliant
James,
goal.
You're rubbing it in, James.
Paddy, do you remember this one horrible thing that happened during that season that you really enjoyed?
I forgot about it. They won the game.
They won the game. 3-2.
It's fine.
Can I ask you about another as a Spurs fan, another chap at QPR you talk a lot about, Adel Taarabt. I love Taarabt at Spurs. In the book, you have quite a bit of fondness for him, but you also say he could be a bit of a knobhead, and he was way too good for QPR all the time. Was he? Do you think Warnock deserves a lot of credit for how he managed him at the club?
He does, yeah, because there were one point in the season, I forget who we were playing, we had an away game on it, it were an evening match, and he called like me, Sean Derry, Clint Earl, Ida Elgson, the senior pros, went up to his hotel room just so could watch him put his cream on. No, I'm only messing. It shows a new technique you were trying.
Yeah, wow. That's why Taarabt didn't want to turn up to training.
Yeah.
And I think Adel had just been doing what he wanted, coming in for training. Lads were coming in and he weren't coming in. But he was producing on pitch and he got us in and he just... Lads were like starting to lose their head with him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he got us in and he just said, lads, please, please stick with him. Don't knock him out or out. I need him on side. He will be the difference between us getting promoted or not. And he says, we all just sat there and we thought, go on, it's you're the manager, we'll go with it. And that's just another way he managed to get all us on his side to make sure we didn't start losing his heads with him as well.
Are you surprised that he's gone on to be, because the last couple of seasons he's been like a tough tackling defensive midfielder for Benfica?
Well, I've seen some things of him on Instagram. He looks fit as a fiddle now, doesn't he?
Yeah. He disappeared basically from on my radar totally, and now he's come back as this, you know, Roy Keane like type player effectively. And it's
when we had him at QPR, it was unbelievable, honestly, when he wanted to be. He was unplayable. Sure. The best player I played with club football anywhere. It was frightening.
Did you play with him when he scored that goal, which was, you know, one of the best ever championship goals, and he ran from his own half and dribbled past everyone and whacked it in for about 20 yards?
That was every week.
Was he? Yeah, that's a good point.
I can't remember him every week, honestly.
True. What was the difference between him and Colin Kazim Richards? Because you mentioned in the book...
you mean the Kazman?
The Kazman, yeah, or Kazim, I think he was called for a bit as well.
Oh, wow.
What was the difference? Because he was also a bit of a tricky player at times, but he rubbed you up the wrong way, it seemed.
Yeah, he were nowhere near as good as Adel.
No,
he were totally different levels, but yeah, there were just a few things happened with Colin. A few times with it coming in with his... picture of himself on a t-shirt, Kazman on his training kit. I just didn't like things like that. Like as we were having himself. Well, he was.
Kazman, did he have to put that on himself?
No, he got a man to do it, so he didn't put a squad number on his training kit.
I can't believe Neil Warnock allowed that.
I can really imagine myself doing that if I became a professional footballer. That's the problem. Not call myself I'd call myself like Burnman. Or like, you know. It would have to make sense. Yeah, no, it works. Burnman. And I have a picture of my face on my own shirt.
Nah.
I would sponsor a club with my own face.
Well, I would draw all over it like I did his.
That's fair. That's fair, Paddy.
Obviously, you had some amazing highlights as a player domestically, and you played for your country as well. Is that a regret at all? It doesn't seem like it. It seems like it was out of your hands, but do you regret not having made more appearances for Ireland?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, when I stopped playing for Ireland, I'd asked for a couple of squads out because I was going through a lot of problems off the pitch as well. So try to sort all that out. Losing my family, we'd moved back to Halifax. Obviously, then the eye incident happened. And there were a lot of things going off. And I felt like when I look back now, I felt like they didn't back me up a little bit because I were a human being. At the end of the day, you make mistakes. I made a few mistakes, like the fight. I shouldn't have put myself in that position. Obviously, I couldn't do about the family stuff, but it was stuff that I would try to deal with myself, which I'm quite a strong character. I'm a strong character. I can deal with things. But I just asked for a bit of time out. I didn't say I didn't want to ever play a game. And I just never got called up again. So, yeah, it was disappointing.
I mean, you're very, very, very frank with a lot of your personal experiences in the book. And, you know, some of the best bits in there. And some of the things you go through as well. I don't understand how you concentrated on football at all. I know you said you had to take some time out of the Ireland squad, but... You know, the things with your kids, which you talk about in there and worrying about not being able to see them and stuff, it's heart-wrenching throughout
the
book.
Yeah, and I think the guy, Neil, helped me out a lot because when all that happened with my family, I remember him telling me to not play that first weekend. And we were playing Man City, actually, away. We drew, basically he said, don't play this weekend. And I'm like, no, I need to be out there. And then he just said, well, I'll tell you what then, after the game on Saturday, don't come in till Thursday, get your son away, go away somewhere for... three or four nights or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I played against Man City, which always clean sheet, which always helps. I went away with my cousin to Marbella and come back and felt like I'd that helped me out massively. Do you know what I mean? Because I went away, yes. I had a few beers, took my mind off it, and then it was straight back into it. So, but that's how I dealt with things. I tried putting stuff to the back of my mind and just getting on with it.
Has that always been the case, even since football as well? Because you talk about depression, quite frankly, in this book. Really, I mean, to me, the very end of the book is you talk about quite a few other footballers and other people's experiences with depression. And it's really, it's a big issue, especially at the moment in for everyone, not just for footballers. But with a lot of people, you know, coming to the end of their careers and losing that routine, it seems like a lot of players struggle with that. And obviously you've thrown yourself into a totally different, you've kind of got yourself your own business. You say you don't miss football that much, but did you find it easy to make that transition?
Not at first, no, because after I finished, I went to Northampton and spent 7 months there as goalkeeping coach. And when I first left that, for 7 months, I didn't do nothing at all. Apart from take my dog for a walk, go golfing, get pissed, that was my life. And we're in a good place, even though I felt to myself, oh, I'm all right. You know, one of them, innit? I'm fine. Yeah. And a friend of mine who I don't speak to now, who set up his transport company, he said, don't take this wrong way, but I think you need a purpose in life to get up. You need to come and, why don't you come and do a bit of driving for me? Get you out of the house and get you up in the morning. And it went from there, really. And that's probably when it started to turn a little bit. Went and worked for him, and all of a sudden, all my stuff from my second ex-wife and getting stuff got sorted then with kids, and then all of a sudden I ended up setting up my own business, and then like I said, everything just sort of turned from there, and I'm in a good place now. I don't miss football because I don't miss week. I love having my weekends to myself now. I might sound stupid. I just love having weekends to myself. Like I said, I've got my business, so that's Monday to Friday, and then I know, right, weekends to myself, happy days.
Ed, do you mind just telling the listeners what your business is?
It's a transport company, logistics, car transport. Basically transporting cars around the country, new dealerships to customers. So yeah, I really enjoy it. I like my own company. I like listening to TalkSport, Smooth, Radio 1, and off I go, and I love it. And I'm all around country every day.
Mellow Magic.
Yeah, I love it.
List some other radio stations you like.
Kistery.
A little bit of Kistery, sure, why not? I mean, yeah, I think the way I think you sort of deal with it throughout, I mean, because you've had so many, you know, difficult moments throughout your career and your life in general. But the way you talk about how Neil Warnock sort of deals with it, he seems to be very mature about, like, letting players make their own decisions, or, like, letting players, like, sort of, you know, you talk about, like, oh, if you do well in this game, then you can have Monday off, or you can have Tuesday off. And, like, do you think that's the right way to go?
Yeah.
Rather than having, like, lots of structure?
I think so. Me, it worked for Neil and it worked for me. Obviously, everyone's different, aren't they? I loved his man management side of it. That's how he dealt with me so well. He knew, he once said to me when I signed for Leeds, I sat in his office, says, why do you keep signing me? Laughing and joking. And he just said to me, he says, I know what I'm going to get from you on pitch, week in, week out. I know what I'm going to get. He says, and obviously off the pitch, I know there could be a car crash coming now and again. But he says, I've got to accept that because I know I can trust you on the pitch. So that's how we were.
It's a shame he never went to Manage Ireland.
I might have called that.
Imagine. Got rid of Shay Given.
Or Man United, or Liverpool.
Spurs.
Yeah, well, here we go. Yeah, okay.
Any regrets in your career at all? Ed, do you ever wish you tried your luck in a league abroad or anything like that?
No, not really. I think you can't have regrets, can you?
No.
It's all my things that have gone off in my life have happened for a reason. I wouldn't have been able to probably do this book if I wouldn't have had some of the stories that have gone off and some of the dramas in my life. So, no, I've got no regrets whatsoever.
Okay.
You That's say good. That, but some books we've read have literally two stories in them and they stretch it out. So
yeah.
It's doable. It's
true. You'd have found a way.
You could have written this book with half the things you have in there, Paddy.
It's true. I'd be honest, you could have got a second book out of it.
Yeah, it should have gone down a bit more.
Yeah.
Paddy, a word you use in the book a lot is shithouse. You use that a lot in the book. Who was the biggest shithouse you played with or played against?
Ooh. put me on the spot now, aren't you? Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Kevin Muscat a bit, and another person who pops up in our books, Danny Dicchio, who lobs a Lucozade bottle at you.
Yeah, ripping me over the head with it, yeah. He weren't even involved in the game. He had a suit on. He weren't even involved. Fucking hell.
Yeah, that's not on. What is a shithouse? What's the Paddy Kenny definition?
Someone who does that behind your back when you're not expecting it. It's so, like when I had that fight in that curry house with my mate, John Joe. So when it first started, he hit me from behind. It's a shithouse thing to do, isn't it?
Agreed.
So it's, dickhead behaviour.
Stand toe-to-toe with him and do it.
Okay, I see.
Not from behind. I'm not having that. That is a shithouse.
Yeah. Lobber Lucozade.
And the dictionary, by the way. Can you get that put in the dictionary, shithouse?
Sure.
Paddy Kenny, get it from behind.
I think you think our connections with the literary world are far greater than they actually are. I don't know the people at the dictionary. Just a few really quick fire questions. Toughest player you played against?
I hear these ones. I'm
okay, like, I'll drop them. Don't worry.
You could have told me this beforehand and I'd have wrote them down. Hardest player.
Who was the best player you played with?
Adel Taarabt.
Who was the best player you played against?
Ooh, a few, weren't they? Ronaldo.
Well, you said you've got a video on your phone, you say.
Yeah, the save from me, yeah.
Can we watch it?
I'll send it you.
Please do. Thank you. I can't wait
because to see it. Last week we read Grant Holt's autobiography, and he said that a swan invaded the pitch and we couldn't find any footage of it.
Right.
So we need that footage. We need proof.
And who was the biggest liability on a night out, Paddy, that you played with?
Me. By a country mile.
Okay.
Eric Geera, Alan Quinn, any of them.
They're all trouble.
Yeah.
It really is a brilliant book, and we loved it, didn't we, guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I've just got my text through. Just got a text of the video.
Oh, I've sent you two videos. One's from when I were in Portugal a few weeks ago. I didn't mean to send you that one. I'm glad it was from Portugal and it weren't a rude one. Shit.
God, I'm getting a lot of value from this.
Send that on.
There you go. You're watching it.
I haven't watched it yet. I'll watch it.
Not the Portugal one. Yeah. If you listen to the commentary, though, they're going on about Ronaldo, and then at the end they go, "Want a bad save, neither."
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Not fair. Unbelievable. Ronaldo.
If that was Sebastian Quattes, that was going right in the bottom corner.
Why do you keep bringing it up, James? Come on.
They won the game.
Just got a few questions we had sent in from our listeners, Paddy, if you don't mind answering them.
Yeah.
Well, one from a guy called Stephen Hall on Twitter says, "Why did you really leave the Blades?" I think Stephen should read the book, to be honest.
Yeah, but I think the answer that's in the book, isn't it?
Agreed.
And it's the truth.
And it's a very compelling reason too, but you're not going to find out, yeah. Stephen, yeah, until you buy it. Gordo on Twitter asks, "Did you ever get fed up of going to training and looking at Michael Brown?" I guess that's because you played with them at a lot of clubs.
Yeah, but I didn't just stare at him, did I? I didn't just stare at him. What's wrong with
him? You ever like, "I will crush you with that golf cart someday."
Yeah. Rotterdam White says, "Would Paddy have looked forward to pre-season training under Bielsa?"
Not a prayer. I want to not take pre-season out of it. Any training with him, because I'm sure they train three times a day sometimes.
Yes.
No chance. Listen, a quick hour used to do me, and that were it.
So you wouldn't fancy being in that team at all?
No chance. Three times a day?
But do you think, like, if you had that chance to play for, you know, I mean, you've played under some great managers, but if you had a chance to play under a Bielsa or a Guardiola with a very different system, you wouldn't enjoy that, trying something different?
Oh, yeah, possibly. I think, obviously, I tell that. I don't know if I tell the story in the book about Roy Keane when he wanted me to pass it to him, playing out from the back, and I didn't dare do it because I was used to kicking it long.
Yes.
Obviously, if you get practice it and you get used to playing out from the back and you've got the players that can do it, then, yeah, obviously, I don't like that.
But my thigh
was hanging off at the end of my career because I'd whacked that many balls.
Right, yeah.
I just rolled it out centre half in my penalty area now and let him kill pitch. My happy days do for me that. That got a few years out of me.
So you're saying these players who like play out from the back, they're lazy. The goalies.
I used to whack 50 balls a game up that pitch. I don't think we do one nowadays, do we?
Proper goalkeeping.
Yeah.
And finally, your publisher Danny asked, "How did you enjoy working with them?"
Oh, it were horrible, honestly. I was just so glad, because when we first started it, I used to have to meet him in an hotel and we used to do it there, face to face. It was so much better than having to meet him and just do it over Zoom and stuff like that. I really enjoyed it. I have become good friends with him through this. And
nice.
He's done an amazing job, and we struck a friendship off from it. And he were a Mad Sheffield United, he's a Mad Sheffield United fan, so it's helped that Sheffield United fan's done it.
Well, that definitely comes through in the book.
Yeah.
Paddy, I'm going to end it on a little game. It's called Real Book, Fake Book. We played this game with Perry Groves, not to keep bringing him up. I'm going to say the name of a football book. You have to tell me if you think it's a real book or one we've just made up, okay?
You fat bastard.
That's all 10 questions. question number one. David Dunn, done it the hard way, real or fake?
Real.
I'm afraid it's fake, Paddy. Oof. Oh, the first hurdle, but you got nine. So Paddy got Perry got 7 out of 10.
Wow,
we're really trying to start this Perry Paddy yeah, rivalry. I don't know why.
I'm very grateful for both of you being here. Question number two: Mark Schwarzer. Mark my words, a year in the life of Mark Schwarzer. Real or fake?
Fake.
It's real. Sorry.
I'm trying to get zero. Has anyone ever got zero?
It's only been Perry's ever done it.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's really done me already, hasn't it?
You're going to say
I need 8 out of 8 now.
You can still get 8 if you get them all right. Yeah. Dougie Friedman, The Long Walk to Friedman. Real or fake? Is correct. It is fake.
Yes, I'm back.
Leon Britton, Brit of All Right. Real or fake?
Fake.
Is correct.
Oh, I'm going to run. Can we stop there? That'll yeah. do me. That'll do me.
I'm afraid we've got to keep going for many, many more. John Arnorisa, Running Man. Real or fake?
Fake.
Real. Oh, sorry.
I thought you were going to throw me a little curveball then. I have 3 fake ones on trot.
I'm in your head. I'm in your head. Question number 6: Graham Potter and the Chamber of Managerial Secrets. Real or fake?
Fake.
Fake is correct.
What's that? Four right?
Three so far. You got
3 out of 6.
You got 4 more there. Yep, 3 out of 6. You got 4 to go. Barry Fry. Come on, Patrick. Barry Fry, Big Fry.
Real.
Is correct.
Oh yes.
Mitchie Batshuayi, Catcher in Batshuayi.
Fake.
It is correct.
Come on!
2 more.
Can we start again?
I've got a feeling it'd be easier second time round, Paddy. I've got a feeling.
I don't know with me. I'll get it wrong.
Neil Redfern. There's only one Neil Redfern. Real or fake?
Knowing him, real.
Is correct.
Only because he loves himself.
Yes.
I knew we'd put that.
Did he ever come in with a picture of his face on his own shirt?
I would have set that on fire. That bloke was a whopper.
Big fan of Neil Redfern. Cool.
I mean, that's 6 out of 9,
isn't
it?
6 out of 9. Yeah. One more to go.
One more
finally.
To tie. Come on, with Ben.
To tie. Finally, number 10. Kenny Paddy, My Autobiography. Real or fake?
Fake. Yes!
It's correct. He's done it. He's done it. Is that the best moment of your career?
Last few years, anyway.
You did 7 out of 10. That's good. You leveled it.
Especially when I got first 2 wrong.
Yes, that was some comeback. That was a great comeback. Paddy, thank you so much for coming on today. The book is out through Vertigo Editions today, Monday, October 5th. You can buy it wherever you get your books. It's brilliant. Go out and buy it. We all loved it, didn't we, guys?
Yeah. Yeah, great. It's terrific. Absolutely brilliant.
Paddy, thank you so much for coming on. Did you enjoy yourself?
Loved it. Yeah, thank you very much.
And please write another book. Please write a sequel and come on the show again when you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would you? Could you do a second book? Is there anything more?
Oh, you never know.
Oh, I'm excited.
The gloves are back on.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone has any thoughts on the episode or any questions for us, follow us, message us at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Football Book Club on Instagram, or on our Facebook page. We'll be back next week with our first wider reading episode, so all the questions you sent in on the episode so far will be read out. Please subscribe, review the podcast. Paddy, can you just chant the words book, 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 book with us?
Yeah, when you're ready.
Okay, 1, 2, 3.
Book, 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 book. What a bizarre way to end this whole thing.
Everybody buy Paddy's book.
Buy Paddy's book.
Thanks for listening to the Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, James Balgen, Jack Bernhardt and Paddy Kenny. It was produced and created by James Bug. Thanks to Paddy Kenny for writing the book. But I know what you're asking, what are they all up to now? Well, Phil Jagielka's back at Sheffield United, and over a decade later, he's still fighting it out for that number one jersey. Wilco de Vocht retired from the game in 2013 before ploughing all his money into a big money remake of Jolly Hockey Sticks. Roy Keane is still fuming Paddy stood up to him. Neil Warnock is naked right now, and Paddy Kenny is an author whose book is out now in all bookstores. You're going to absolutely love reading it. We'll see you next week. Until then, bye-bye.